Isn't that neat and impactful? Beautiful story.
Beautiful.
And some of you may not realize that we have such a ministry in our backyard, which is a blessing for us. Let me get this fixed here. My slides are deciding to... How many of you have been by Wiregrass? I hope you've seen it on the Honeysuckle. Is it Honeysuckle still there, or is it Westgate Parkway?
Westgate,
okay. Right there across from like Hot's Deli, you know, I drive by it pretty much every day on my way back from work, but, you know, it took me two and a half years to realize what all they do there, but this is a street view here of Wiregrass Hope. And as I discovered more and more about Wiregrass Hope and what they do in their ministry, I invited Rebecca right away to come into my, I guess I can use a microphone. I invited her to come into my classroom and speak to my students in my classroom, because even at a Christian school, I have students who are confused on the issue of abortion and the ethics and the morality of abortion, when it is okay, if it's okay at all. So she came in and did a great job presenting there and discussing that with my students. And I thought, okay, let's bring her into Dothan Messianic Fellowship and have her share this with you guys as well. I'm pretty sure most of us, if not all of us, are on the same page ethically about the evils of abortion and the sanctity of human life, because we're all made in God's image. But I wanted to bring her in more so to figure out how we can plug into that ministry and serve in their cause. And that's one of the things we're going to kind of bring out today, is where we could fit in and help them and support them. So these are some of the things they offer here. It's a little bit faint here, you can see it, but teen education, fatherhood program, unplanned pregnancy, pregnancy resources, pregnancy loss, marriage counseling, counseling for women, and counseling for women, men. They offer a wide variety of services. So without further ado, I want to welcome Rebecca to come on up, and here's her. And I was on the phone with Rebecca yesterday, and I kind of said, have you ever been to a Messianic congregation before? And she said, no, I haven't. And I was like, okay, well, let me explain a few things. I said, you're going to hear a lot of different languages and words being spoken. And she said, that's okay, I grew up Pentecostal.
Yeah.
No, she didn't say that. But I did too, so I can know. But no, we want to say thank you so much for coming and taking the time out of your Saturday to do this. And you survived all the different languages and the ancient songs and everything. I always say just mouth the word hippopotamus over and over, and no one will know the difference. So you did great. But I wanted to start, Rebecca, with kind of digging into your past and your story of how you came to faith. And I think you have an amazing, beautiful story, how you can relate to people who are kind of, like on the video, in a time of crisis. Would you kind of go into that a little bit?
Yeah. First of all, is this on? Can you guys hear me? Thank you so much for having me. And I really enjoyed your service so far. It was so beautiful. I love the reading of the scriptures. I love the praise and worship. And I just felt the presence of God here. And it was a beautiful morning. So thank you for letting me share that with you. And I love that we were able to open with this video, because I got so emotional watching it. I was like, oh no, I shouldn't be watching this before I get up to speak. I'm going to start crying. But I actually kind of new to Wiregrass Hope. I've only been there for about 2 years. And I was, my job is to go into schools and talk to students and go to groups like this and just share about what we do at Wiregrass Hope, but also talk to students about healthy relationships and character development and things like that. So it's unusual for me at that time to be in the office. I was mostly in schools, and I was in the office one day, and they were going to do the recording for our upcoming banquet, and they were doing testimonials. And I had not met Raina before, and she had this beautiful little girl, and they said, hey, are you busy? I was like, no. They're like, can you watch this baby while we do the video thing? And I said, sure. Now, you don't know this yet, but I have two boys that are mine. I have three stepsons, and then I have two grandsons. So I'm surrounded by boys in my life. So when they gave me this little girl, I was like, oh, how awesome. I just like hugged her, and we played, and she had this big bow in her hair, and she was so cute. And when I watched that video, it just makes me so emotional, because I enjoyed that precious 30 minutes that I had holding this beautiful, just perfect little girl, and to think that there was a possibility that she was not even going to have a chance to be born. It just makes me so emotional to think about that. But yes, I grew up in a family, a Christian family. My dad was military. helicopter pilot at Fort Rucker, so I'm an Army brat. Do we have any other Army brats or military people in here? So you guys know what that's like. So we moved a lot, and you know, we have four brothers and one sister, so we have a big family. And I know I talked to you about your big families. So I think we've got a lot of big families in here too. And so you know, I was raised in the Word. I was raised as a Christian. You know, I gave my life to God when I was 6 years old. I can remember, you know, my dad baptizing me. And so when I was a teenager, I've always kind of had this, I'm the middle child. I'm three of six. But I always say, like, I'm the favorite somehow. I don't know how that worked out. You know, normally the middle child's a forgotten child, but I was always just so loved and celebrated. And with my personality, I was just really outgoing, involved in youth group and with school stuff, and just living my best life. And I had been taught, you know, right in the Word of God. So just to kind of share some of my story and how I can relate to these girls, I was 14 years old and going to the youth group there. We went to church in Ozark and just involved in everything. And my dad actually was going to get stationed in Panama, the country of Panama. So he left and he went to Panama to get us set up, I guess. And I'll never forget that summer, my mom, and just, you know how it is, having all these kids. We lived on Fort Rucker, and I just got running in the neighborhood with my friends, you know. And then I found a boyfriend, and it was kind of like my first boyfriend. And I didn't talk to my parents about it. You know, my dad was gone, my mom was, you know, there, but I just kind of hid that relationship and developed that relationship in a way that was unhealthy and made some really bad choices. It was my first boyfriend, and I just really went against what I knew was right in my heart and just thought, I'm just going to do what I want to do, and just really followed the crowd. And I'll never forget, my dad came home and he said, well, he came back to get us to go to Panama, and he said, but what, things got changed. We're going to Germany now. And he kind of figured out that I was kind of running around. I mean, not running the streets of Fort Rucker, you know, with my friends. Like, hey, Mom, can I go spend the night with this friend? And can I go do this? But then I'd go hang out with my friends and my boyfriend inappropriately. And my dad's like, what's going on? You know, like, he put a stop to it as soon as he got home and realized, you know, that I should not have had that freedom. But he packs up the family. We move to Germany. And we get to Germany, and I'm in the ninth grade. And I start this new school, and it's a huge school. It's like a military base with, you know, like 4,000 students or something. And I start school, and I start to feel poorly, and I'm feeling sick. And actually, I thought I had breast cancer, to be honest with you. I went and told my mom, I was like, I think there's something wrong with me. I might have breast cancer. So we went to the doctor, and the doctor, after talking to my mom, they said, you know, we need to do a pregnancy test. And my mom came and said, you know, the doctor and my mom had talked outside the room, and then my mom came in the room with the doctor and said that. I was like, oh no, we don't, you know, I don't know, we don't need to do that. And my mom's like, you need to be honest with me. And so I broke down and shared with her that I had been, you know, inappropriate, and I knew I had done wrong, and I was so scared. And so this is in the old days, 1991, if that tells you anything. So they didn't get immediate results in the military hospital, so I had to take the test. It was on a Friday. And they said you had to call the number on a Monday to get the results. And so I can remember going home, and my mom said, you're going to have to tell your dad what's going on. I said, why? Why do I have to tell him? Why can't I wait till Monday and find out, you know, for sure? And she said, no, you know, your dad needs to know what's going on. So in typical teenage fashion, I waited till Sunday evening, and I said, Dad, you know, can you take me to the store? And so I kind of get him by himself, and we went to the store, and we're driving back, and we're going on this windy road, and I finally just broke down and just said, Dad, you know, I don't know if Mom's told you, but I really messed up bad. I was just wrong in my relationship with my boyfriend, and now I'm took a pregnancy test, and I'm so scared, and I don't know. And I could just remember just having this complete meltdown, and my dad pulled the car over to the side of the road and just sat there and just listened to me, and I just cried and just, you know, begged for his forgiveness and love, and he didn't say a word. He just listened to me. When I got done, he put the car back in drive, and we drove to the house. He went upstairs to his room, and the next day was Monday, and I had to go to school, and my mom was going to call the number. But I knew when I got home from school, I would know, you know, if I was pregnant or not. And so it was a long day at school just thinking about that. I didn't have any friends, didn't have anybody. I had been, you know, new to that school. So I came home and I just remember, you know, opening the door, and I had rode the bus home and got home, and I opened the door and I said, "Mom, where are you?" She said, "I'm upstairs in your room." And so I go up the stairs and I open the door to my bedroom, and my mom, my dad, my three little brothers, my older sister were there in my room, and they had a banner that said, "We love you." And they had some flowers and some balloons for me. And that was my experience. You know, I had my family just put their arms around me and say, "We love you. We can't change what has happened, but we are going to be here to help you and to support you." And so thankfully, you know, that was my tribe that surrounded me and accepted me. And that moment, that day, I can just remember just saying, "God, if you will forgive me, and I will just serve you to the best of my ability for the rest of my life." And I have, and I haven't been perfect, and everybody messes up, but I have really committed my life to the Lord. And my boyfriend, that I was my first boyfriend, that was the father of the baby, up to this point, we had been communicating. You know, I moved away, but we got like a phone call once a week. This is before email and all this stuff. And then we'd wrote letters and stuff. So, you know, my parents said, "You need to call him, and, you know, we're going to have to talk about it." So I just never forget that phone call of calling him. And the first thing he said is, "Well, you're going to have to get an abortion." And I can remember thinking, "I don't even know what an abortion is. What is he talking about?" You know, like, I was very naive and protected. Like, I really didn't even understand what that was. And my parents were, you know, right near me. And they were, like, just shaking their head, like, "No, no, no." And then he said, "Well, if you don't have an abortion, then I'm not going to have anything to do with you." Oh. And so, of course, and, you know, I was just like, what does that mean? And so he did not have anything more to do with me. But my parents, you know, explained to me what that was and said, "We are not doing that, and it's fine. God's going to help you and take care of you, and this little one has a plan for this life, and we're going to just move forward." And so I did, and my son Josh is now 29 years old, so that kind of, people always, you know, I was such a young mom, you know, I had him when I was 15, and so that was something I had to just walk through life experiencing, where everybody's like, "That's your kid? Oh my goodness, how old were you when you had him? Were you 10? You know, like, I know, have you ever heard of teenage pregnancy? It happens, you know, but God just has used him and used our story to just let people know that it's not the end of the world if you have an unplanned pregnancy or if you have a teenage pregnancy, because that, just like in that video, that fear of everything changes, and it does, you know, everything does change when you have kids. I mean, anybody who has kids knows that it all changes, but that God is in that, and he's the creator of life, and he has purpose and plan for every single life, that it's not by accident. And so Josh went on, I just wanted to say, he graduated from Northside Methodist. He went to Oral Roberts University and graduated. He's in the ministry. He's working on entering the military to be a chaplain. So he's working on his Master's of Divinity right now. So God has just definitely had his hand on Josh's life. And I'm just privileged to be his mom. And but, you know, working in the center, and we're talking about the resources that we have, I meet women every single day who are faced with unplanned pregnancy, not even necessarily a teenager, but just a young adult, or even like this lady here was 39 years old. But anytime we experience an unplanned pregnancy, it's so scary. And not very often do people have parents like I did, or have that family support like I did. Most of the time, these women are coming from difficult situations and unhealthy relationships. And their parents, you know, kind of have their own drama and things going on that they can't even really be a good support system to them. So during the time of COVID, one of the main things that we offer at Wiregrass Hope Group are free pregnancy tests. So the health department, you can go to the health department and get a health pregnancy test, and you have to have a positive proof of pregnancy in order to apply for Alabama Medicaid. So that's the step. So if you find out you're pregnant, you go to the health department, get a pregnancy test, they give you that verification, and then you can apply for your Medicaid. Well, we also offer pregnancy tests, but a lot of people don't know about us. Only sometimes just a word of mouth, or if they see it online. But during COVID, the health department shut down and they stopped offering pregnancy tests. So when people would call them, they would say, "You have to go to Wiregrass Hope." So last year, our pregnancy tests, or this year, meaning 2020, have increased 51%.
Wow.
So I have the numbers here of what our pregnancy test numbers are for this year. And so far, we've done 761 pregnancy tests. And when we do these pregnancy tests, we have the clients come in and they're just there for the pregnancy test so they can get the verification so they can go get their insurance, right? And so we have an opportunity. They come in, we kind of have a questionnaire, a medical questionnaire that we give in. And one of the questions that we ask them on the medical questionnaire is about their pregnancy history. And the question is, how many times in the past have you been pregnant to include any abortions or miscarriages? And sadly, so many women in our community have had past abortions, and here they are pregnant again, and that actually is a viable option for them. So throughout that time, this year alone, we've had 94 women that have come in out of those 761 pregnancy tests who told us that they wanted to get an abortion. So 94 women that came into us when for the pregnancy test verification, finding out that they were having this unplanned pregnancy. So we have a one-on-one mentoring. So it's a one-on-one session when they come. They'll talk to someone like me. We sit down in a room and I go through these questions. And so when they share that with us, because another question is, if you are pregnant today, what are your intentions? And I say parenting, adoption, or undecided. So that's when they'll say undecided, and then we can kind of explore that further. But out of those 94 women this year, 85 of them we know for a fact have chosen life. So those are 85 lives that were saved. And not to say that, you know, they were just maybe in that moment saying that, you know, maybe they would have made the decision otherwise, but we were there to support them. So what we were able to do is when we find out that they have a positive pregnancy test, the first thing we can do is help them with their Medicaid. So we help them do their application, we help them do their process, but then we offer a free parenting program. And what that looks like is we tell them, you come in for these 9 visits, and you come in and you meet with somebody like me, you sit in a room like this, you watch a 20-minute video, and it's great stuff about parenting, like baby hygiene and what to do when the baby's crying, so just some really practical car seat safety, things like that. And each time they watch a video for 20 minutes, they have a little paper, they fill in the blanks, and then someone like me would come back in the room afterwards, we go over the questions, and then they turn in their homework for last time, so we go over the homework, and each time they have homework about a baby stuff, and then they have spiritual homework. So that just kind of gets them to, if they do it, and most of them do, read a scripture, tell us about your thoughts about God, you know, do you believe that he's the creator? So it just gives us a chance to have these conversations to find out where they're at and just kind of explore that more. And then every time they come to a visit, they receive a free gift. And then for the baby, like wipes and toys, receiving blanket, that kind of thing. And then at the end of the program, if they do all 9 visits, then they earn a free car seat. So a lot of these girls were like, wow, I didn't know this existed. And so they're coming. And so we're getting to see them over and over again. And each time being able to share the gospel or just share God's love with them, just find out where they're at and just encourage them with the word. But then also giving them good resources as parents. So we encourage the dads to come. We have a fatherhood program, I think that was up there. And so if the dads come, and each time they come, they earn points. And so they earn like 20 points, 30 points every time, and they accumulate these points, and then they take those points and they go shopping in our baby boutique at the end. And in the baby boutique, that's when you guys could help donate things for our baby boutiques. I see some babies, so when they grow out, you know where to like send your stuff. You know, they can take their stuff and go buy, you know, use their points to get strollers or baby baths and things like that. So that really gives them the resources. So, you know, 80% of the women, they say on the statistics, who are really thinking about abortion, it comes from a place of, you know, their social economical status. You know, they're like, I can't afford another child. I can't take care of another child. The father of the baby is not going to support me. He said to get an abortion. Most of them, I will say personally, that I've talked to, it is coming from the father of the baby. Well, let's just do this. You know, this will solve the problem. It'll just go away. And so when they find out there are these resources, it eases their mind. Like, oh, well, you apply for Alabama Medicaid. They pay for your all your medical expenses, and then we can help you if you come do all this stuff. You earn these things. It's not necessarily just free we're handing out. You have to come and earn it, and I think that that's a sense of pride, like, oh, I can do that. Like, I can come once a month and do an hour and do this thing. And so, you know, it gives them that opportunity to not just feel so alone and be so afraid. And then another resource is we offer free ultrasounds. And this is huge for abortion-minded clients because, like she said, you have that opportunity to hear the heartbeat and see the baby. I had a client come in not too long ago, and she did not realize that she was pregnant. And she said, I don't know, I just think there's something wrong with me. I'm just having some female issues, but I just thought I'd come by. I work at Krispy Kreme. And so I just thought I'd come by because we're right there kind of by Krispy Kreme. I thought, oh, okay, well, let's go do a test. And so it was pregnant. I mean, it was positive. And then we happened to have the ultrasound tech there that day. And the client said, well, you know, she had had a previous abortion. She said, well, I'm just going to do abortion. Like, she was so dismissive. I was trying to, you know, just talk to her, fill it out. I said, well, you'll need to know how long, far along you are because abortions are based on how far along you are as far as your waist gestation, on what type of procedure you can have and how much it costs. I said, so if you like, we can do an ultrasound and just so you'll know how far along you are. And she's like, all right. So we go back there. She said, I don't want to see the screen because we have like a big TV screen up on the wall. She said, no, I don't want to hear the heartbeat. I said, okay. I said, well, do you mind if I come in with you? Normally we don't come in with them, but just the ultrasound test. She said, yeah, will you? And so I just went and stood with her and just kind of just, you know, have my hand on her arm. And so Joanna's doing the ultrasound and she's, you know, measuring, and she measures 19 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So she's really far along. And Joanna's like, you know, you're measuring. And then she really gets upset and she just starts crying. And, you know, she said, well, do you want to hear the heartbeat? She's like, no. And she was like, well, do you want to see, you know, the baby? And she was laid back and she was closing her eyes. She's like, no. And so she did say, even laying there, she said, well, I can go to Florida. Well, in Florida, you can get an abortion up to 26 weeks. And so somehow she knew that. She said that. So then, you know, we just loved her and just talked to her. And then, you know, Joanna just kept doing her measurements and doing her stuff. And she said, you know, so just that fear, you know, that's what it was all about, laying there, just the shock of this news, which she didn't expect, and just loving on her and just, you know, rubbing her arm and just, you know, she softened and slowly softened and slowly softened. And then she finally, I saw her kind of peeking through her eyes, you know, and, you know, Joanna kind of saw it. And she said, Joanna says, well, if you don't mind, we'll just listen for just a moment to the heartbeat, just because I will record it. She heard that heartbeat and, you know, the tears. And then she was so far along, we knew it was a boy. She said, well, do you want to know what it is? And she was like, no. And then after a few minutes, she goes, okay, well, tell me, you know, and it was a boy. And so, you know, just that opportunity in that room, the ministry that can happen through the ultrasound to just connect that mom to the baby, that it is life, that it is a whole, you know, distinct living human being, and that it's not just a glob of cells or just a tissue, that the culture and the world, that's their message, is that's your right to make that choice. And we were talking when I came and talked to the students, I told them, I said, hey, listen, I'm pro-choice. I think that all women should have a right to choose whatever they want to choose. They can choose, you know, where they go to school. They can choose who they want to marry. They can choose what kind of car they want to drive or what kind of job they want to have. But I don't think anyone has the right to choose to intentionally kill an innocent human being. And that's the difference, you know, that the culture kind of puts out, that you're not being tolerant or you're not being understanding. You're trying to take away women's rights. And I'm such an advocate for women's rights. I think we all should have rights. But when I talk about the opposing side, I say pro-abortion instead of pro-choice, because to me, that's what they're choosing. That's what they're standing on. I agree on pro-choice about everything but abortion. So that's what you'll hear us kind of referencing when we talk about the other side. We'll say pro-abortion instead of pro-choice.
Yeah, and thank you so much for sharing your story. It's a beautiful story. And for those listening, even online 3 years from now, I don't know, our Creator is a Creator, and He loves us so much that He can take our biggest mistakes, our biggest tragedies, and he can flip them on their head and redeem them for his glory, just like he's doing with you, and how you're able to better relate to these women because of what you walked through and the consequences of decisions. So pray that he does that in your life. If you've had to walk through something, or you've had to experience something that felt unjust or was a consequence of a decision that you made, allow him to redeem that. But we talked about pro-choice or pro-abortion, and it really boils down to, when you're talking with people about this issue, it boils down to a war of words and how to define those words. And when you ask someone that question, like if I ask a room full of people of different worldviews or different walks of life, is it ever wrong to kill an innocent human being? You'll see some people, they will respond immediately, yes. And some people, they have to think about it. What is an innocent human being? But by and large, people are good, and they will say, yes, it's wrong to kill a human being. Then it boils down to, okay, well, how do we define a human being? Like, we actually have to split those hairs in our society today, which is crazy to me. But one of the things that Rebecca taught me, and I want to teach you guys, is the SLED acronym. When you are having conversations with people about this issue, you can kind of refute their arguments about abortion and why it's okay. And we can ask them that question. You can start off square one, is it ever wrong to kill an innocent human being? And you might get a no, it's not okay out of them. Okay, great. Now, how do we define a human being? Do we define a human being? And we're going to go through these four words here, and Rebecca's going to talk us through. But the first one is size. Does size determine the worth, or does it make a human being a human being? But would you mind kind of fleshing that out a little bit?
So I think that, you know, as Christians and as believers, you know, most of us obviously are pro-life. You know, we understand that we're created in his image, and that, you know, God is the author of life. And so for in our circles, when we talk to each other, it's so easy for us to agree on that and to pull out our scriptures and, you know, Psalms 114, you know, that we were knit together in the womb and he knew us. But, you know, that all resonates with us. But when we're talking to the world, when we start to share our biblical views on abortion and on life, lots of times people just shut us down, like, oh, that's your religion, or that's your personal, you know, spiritual beliefs. You can't impose that on me. And so, you know, when we talk about pro-life arguments or how to defend the unborn or to present our case for life, we want to not just close people off because we're coming from a biblical view, although all that is true, and we know that's true, but this is a way for us to be equipped to have those kind of conversations. And one thing I want to just say is this is a way for us to simplify the conversation, because lots of times we get on these rabbit trails, what if this happens, and what if that happens, and how many weeks, and, you know, what about this situation and that situation, is that fair to the child, is that, you know, so you get on all these rabbit trails, but really what we're going to talk about today is how to simplify that and just kind of keep reining it in to the point. The main thing is, like he said, is it okay to intentionally kill an innocent human being? And if abortion does kill an innocent human being, then it's not okay. So when we simplify those issues, then we're able to not come across as being ugly or trying to press our religion or our biblical views. And then also, just remember, as we're going through this, I'm going to give you guys some good ideas of how to have those conversations, but always to be gracious in our conversations with people, because even in a room like this, there may be people who have experienced abortion in their past or have a family member or some type of connection to that. And we know that we serve a God that loves us and forgives all sin, no matter what. We've all fallen short. So there's no judgment against people or trying to shame people. It really is just about, you know, leading them to the cross so they can be forgiven and restored and, you know, healed of those hurts. But then also to know that we're not going to win any arguments by arguing. You know, it's really about gracious conversation and planting that seed. You know, I have conversations with people, and we talk to the school, to the students, and some of those girls, we got the feedback on the paper, they weren't necessarily convinced that it still was okay to, they kind of still felt like, I don't want somebody to, we had one comment that says, I don't think anybody should tell me what I have to do with my body. So you may not win the argument where they're standing right in front of you like, oh, now I see, I'm pro-life now. But you're started, you put that pebble in their shoe. You've, you know, just started that little thought process and kind of planted that seed that can grow and may come to fruition later. So, you know, we're going to talk about the science of embryology. So that's one thing about this day and age. We do have ultrasound. We have advanced medical terminology and you know, types of research that we've done. So this isn't like in 1970 where we weren't even really sure about the stages of life in embryo and that type of thing. So one of the things that they'll say, and I've heard it even recently with a client, she's got a difficult situation and she's considering abortion, and she's like, well, I can get a medical or a pill that you can do the medical abortion up to 10 weeks. So she just keeps trying to make her decision before 10 weeks. She says, I'm not going to do it after, I'm not going to do a surgical procedure, but the medical one I could do. And so this argument of size really came to my mind, you know, to just really, why does the size make a difference on who you are or what it is? And, you know, I gave, and this is what we're just to kind of lead into that, what we were talking about when I talked to your students. So if you have a small boy, let's say a five-year-old boy, and he's your son, and he comes and you're washing the dishes in the sink, and he comes up behind you and he says, Mommy, Daddy, can I kill it? What do you say? You say, what is it? Right? So you turn around and whatever he has in his hand, I mean, if it's a spider, yeah, kill it. You know what I'm saying? If it's his brother's neck, no, we're not killing it. You know, it's your brother. So that's what we need to help define to our opposing, to the young people, to the people who have that question, because the culture isn't really having that conversation. They're making it all about you having a right. They're not having the conversation of what it actually is. So, you know, when we talk about size, according to the embryologist, this is medical textbook, from the very beginning of conception, when we are a zygote, which is the one cell stage, we are a distinct, whole, complete human being. Meaning everything in that original cell, once the sperm and the egg collide, everything that is formed in that cell is everything of who we are. So that from that very beginning stage, our DNA, our blood type, our gender, all those things are determined in that cell, and then it's a self-directing development. So it's going to continue to grow. And so when we talk about size, you think about a baby at 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 10 weeks. Each time they're changing in that size, they're growing, but they're not having anything added to them. It isn't like a certain point that, okay, now we're going to attach the arms, and now we're going to give it a heart, and everything's there, and it's whole and complete, and it's growing. And so when we talk about size, you know, like even with this young lady that I was talking to, she kept going back to the 10 weeks thing. And she, you know, kind of like, well, I'll make a decision before I'm 10 weeks. And I'm like, but let's, do you believe that this is a baby? You know, do you believe that this is a human being? I mean, do you think it's a turtle or a goldfish? No, it's a baby, right? And she'll say, yeah, but I mean, you know, and I think things being legal kind of makes people feel like permission, like it's okay. You know, she's like, but I can do that up to 10 weeks. So when we think about a... you know, a newborn is, you know, smaller than us. Is that newborn less valuable than us based on the size? I mean, it's this big and we're this big. Well, this little baby in your tummy is this, you know, this big and we're this big. So, you know, we really have to have that whole conversation about size. And society, men are usually bigger than women. Does that mean that they have more value than us? You know, so it's about the value that you place determined on that. And, you know, when you break that down and you kind of have that type of conversation, people are like, well, how can we really defend that? Human life is human life, and it's developing all along.
Yeah, and you can see here in this chart that I put up here, I thought I'd include this. You can see, I mean, it begins to look like a human just a month after conception. Yeah. It clearly, it evidently is a human. But the next one is level of development. Does level of development, so we've established that size does not make a human being. It's, I mean, size does not change the worth or make it less human. The next one is level of development. Does the level of development of that organism make it less valuable, or does it not make it human? And this is the one where we talked about, you know, you have a three-year-old who's not fully developed yet, but then you've got an embryo that's not fully developed either. So if we carry that to its logical conclusion, level of development does not make a human being a human being. It's a human being, it's just not fully developed yet. I don't know if you had anything
to add. You know, it's amazing how as a society we do have value that we place on people. No matter what walk of life, what stage of life, we'll say, oh, well, they're more educated, or they're, you know, better looking, or they are so accomplished, right? Sometimes we put emphasis on that. And when we look around, we say, what do we have in common, you know, as people, what do we have in common? And we all have differences. So the only thing we have in common is our human nature. And, you know, this level of development, it's so easy to kind of be, you know, judgmental, or like, oh, that's less than because it's not as developed. But we really have to bring that point home that just because, when does development mean that you have a right to kill someone? You know, if I have a two-year-old, that girl doesn't have a reproductive system that's developed, then compared to a teenage girl, well, that doesn't mean she's less valuable. She has just as much value as a 14-year-old.
And the next one, you guys will get a chuckle out of this, is environment. Does environment of that human being, the surroundings of that organism, that does that change its level of sanctity or worth? So if I get in the airplane, does that make me less or more of a human being? Does it make me more or less valuable? This is a big concern because, you know, in New York, if I'm not mistaken, you can, if a baby is due at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, at 4:59, it's legal to terminate that pregnancy.
Oh, that's,
and that
sick.
Is tragic. That is, and it's all about environment. That boils down to an environment. Well, it's still in the womb, so therefore it's not a human being. But since when did environment change? And I made this analogy when Rebecca's in my classroom. What if I replicate the womb for a human being, and I put myself back in the same amount of amniotic fluid, and, you know, I just replicate everything like that, and I'm floating in that. Does that make me not a human being? That's the nonsensical aspects of this argument. But.
Yeah, and you know, you were talking about splitting hairs. I think that's really where it comes down to the weeks of gestation, and we put that value on a certain amount of weeks. Oh, you can do it up to this many weeks. Oh, well, you can do it up to this many weeks. Well, it doesn't change what we are talking about, which is a baby, which is a human, which is human life. And, you know, this argument is kind of what we hear probably the most, that it's part of the mom, so it's her decision. And, you know, when we find out, when we really kind of look into the science of it, even though it's in the mom's tummy and she's carrying the baby, it's not necessarily part of the mom. It's a separate, distinct, whole living human being. That baby lots of times has a different blood type than the mom. So really it is a completely different person. What surrounds it is the amniotic fluid, and it's connected by the cord. But, you know, just like if you are 50% of the babies are male, so does a mom all of a sudden have a male, like she's part male because she's carrying a male? You know, this is, she is temporarily housing this life, but it's not who she, it's not part of her body. It's not an organ that she has, like her liver or her kidney or something like that, that would definitely be something like she has a right to not, you know, to not give up. But, you know, really, I think that that's probably the number one argument when it comes to, for women's choice, they say that's my body, I have a choice. It's just helping them to understand that it's not really their body as in a member of their body, it's just part, they're holding that baby while it's developing.
It's not like it's an appendage of their body. Mm-hmm. It's a unique human being in there. So we've got size, let's review so far. We've got size, level of development, environment, and the last one is degree of dependency. So here I got a photo of an old man in a wheelchair who's probably dependent on his family for survival and for getting around and doing odds and ends things. And then we have a baby who's dependent on the mother to feed that baby with a bottle or to breastfeed that baby. But degree of dependency does not change, doesn't make that human being less human being, and therefore we can terminate that life. I know some people would maybe, you know, some socialist communities would say that, you know, the older the person that gets, they're a pool on our system, so therefore we need to set up like a death council for them or something like that and terminate their life. But did you have something to add? It's a very slippery slope. You know?
Yes.
Absolutely. And that's the same argument that the...
No, I don't want to be aborted. I mean, I want to die. Well, not a choice. 9 months old.
And that's the big thing about abortions is, especially with later abortions, the baby absolutely feels the abortion. The baby feels the pain. And we have scientific proof of that. But I don't know if you have anything to add on level of dependency.
Yeah, when we talk about level of dependency, I think this really kind of speaks to the larger issue, which is the sanctity of life. Unfortunately, in the United States, we're not only threatening the unborn, but the living who are dependent are being threatened. And so when we talk about the sanctity of life, we're talking about from the womb to the tomb, that we should value life at every single stage and at every single degree of dependency. And anyone who has had special needs children or had a loved one that was totally dependent on them, they know that they love that person. That person is a human being. It's so evil to think that I think that there's 9 states that you can do legal euthanasia. Doctor-assisted suicide. It's just shocking to think that we live in a world today that's becoming more and more popular accepted by the mainstream. And that really does come from the issue of the sanctity of life. And, you know, God, we know, doesn't make mistakes, right? Every child that's born, every person that is here, he has a plan and purpose for. But the world's view and what they're saying is, if you are dependent and what if you have a child that has some bad diagnosis, or what if there's a bad situation, then they should be allowed to get an abortion. And that's one of those rabbit trails that we have to just bring it back to: is it okay to intentionally kill an innocent human being? And so that, you know, that's not the issue that we're raising up. And when we think of degree of dependency, there are so many people who are dependent on insulin, that are dependent on certain medications, and then you really get into, well, if it's okay for them, like she was saying, then can we go on to the other degrees of dependency that people may have just in medical care?
So I hope these give you some tools that you can use to refute, you know, pro-abortionists in a graceful way. You know, does size matter? Does level of development, does that make a human more or less human? Or does their environment change them to be less human? Or does their level of dependency make them less human being? And ultimately, it boils down, like she said, take them back to that initial question of, is it ever okay to take an innocent human life? And Michael, I'll see your hand up.
Yes, after hearing all this, it just makes me wonder, if George Washington was alive today, what would he think about?
Yeah, I think he'd be speechless, to be honest with you.
Rebecca.
Oh, yes.
I remember very clearly when Women's Hope first started doing the ultrasound.
Just a sec.
And when they started doing those ultrasounds, I cannot emphasize enough what a powerful tool that is. Because a lot of times for a woman, or even the father of the child, it doesn't become real until you see that image on the screen, or you hear the heartbeat or both. And so many young women have agreed to not terminate the pregnancy based on seeing that image. Yes. Yeah, that's a very powerful.
Perfect segue, because we're about to show some images, and there's a particular image that Rebecca's going to talk about that really helped fuel the civil rights movement in the 1960s. And would you tell us a story?
You know, we're talking about changing our culture and changing, kind of maybe empowering us or inspiring us, you know, to take action, to be, get involved, to help support life and to help these women and help these unborn babies. And so in 1955, I just want to just speak to how powerful images are and what a difference they can make. And this is a secret thing. You don't really see images. You can't even hardly talk about it. You're not going to see this on television or anything like that. But in 1955, there was a young black man who was 14 years old. He lived in Chicago, and his name was Emmett Till. And he came down to visit his family, some cousins in Money, Mississippi, in the summer of 1955. So he traveled down to visit his cousins, and he got off the train, and he met his friends and cousins, and he, like in typical 14-year-old fashion, started bragging about, you know, girls and all this stuff. And he said he had a white girlfriend at home. Well, of course, these young black boys in Mississippi, they were like, that's unheard of. I mean, we've never heard of that. I mean, that's crazy talk. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know. And so they were like, we dare you to talk to a white woman here. So the story goes that he went to a store, a local store, and checked out, bought something like a 7-Eleven type convenience store. And the checkout cashier was a young woman, a white woman across the cashier. She was 21 years old, and he bought this bubble gum, and he said, thanks, babe, or something to that degree. Well, she was married, and a couple days later, her husband and her brother came and got this young man out of his uncle's house in the middle of the night and beat him and beyond recognition, and shot him and threw him in the river. And the sheriff found his body 3 days later, and it was just unrecognizable what they had done to this young man. And so they put his body in a box, and the sheriff put a note on the top of the box, told his mom, Miss Till, do not open this box. You don't want to see, this is not your son. You don't want to see this. It's horrible. You know, we're so sorry. Sends the body back to Chicago. And so Miss Till, the mom, made a decision to open that casket and to see her son in that way. And at that time, Jet Magazine, you know, the media had gotten a hold of the story, and they came, and she said, you can photograph this. And they were like, how can you do this? How can you have this open? She said, I want the world to see what they did to my little boy. And a couple months later, I was listening to a thing, Rosa Parks' life story, and she said when she was sitting on that bus, she remembered the picture of that little boy.
Oh, wow.
She was inspired by that. It changed her. You know, we hear about things that are awful, and we hear about what that looks like or what that could be like, but when we see things, we can't unsee them, right? Those images can change us and really put a fire under us about the issues. So this piece that we're gonna, is just about 55 seconds long. It doesn't have any words to it. There's no narration, it's just music. So if you want to look away, you can, but it's just gonna show the aftermath of a first, second, and third trimester abortion. So definitely for the little kids, you know, you might want to just have them look away for a moment, but really just to show us how developed and what a baby actually looks like in these different stages, first, second, and third trimester.
Thank you.
I know that was hard to see. And you know, when we talk about these ultrasounds, we're sitting there and I'm looking at these babies who are 7 weeks and they've got a heartbeat and they've got their little head and their arms. And so really just sharing that message of what life really is, and that it is from the point of conception. And you know, the way we can take action though against that is to be able to get involved. And I'm not saying just at Wiregrass Hope Group, but to just foster through foster care, through adoption, through if you know a single mom or if you know a young lady that you can, you know, give a meal to, a Walmart gift card, maybe watch her kids for, things that we can, as believers and as the body of Christ, can reach out to these young women and help just love them and love their children, because it promotes life in general. Like we said, there are so many women that come that are wanting to choose abortion because of they can't afford it, or they're overwhelmed, or they don't have enough support in that sense. But at Wiregrass Hope Group, the ways that you guys could help us is, first of all, by praying for us. Every single day, we're open on Monday from 8 to 8. So we see people in the evenings on Mondays. And then, you know, Tuesday through Thursday, we close 8 to 5. But Fridays, we're off. So every day, we're doing pregnancy tests. Every day, we're doing parenting visits. And every day, we're doing ultrasounds. And so if you feel led to volunteer, we would love to have you come and be mentors. We have a fatherhood program, so some of these men in here can maybe be a fatherhood mentor. That would be awesome. And then also, we love to receive donations, you know, obviously financial donations, but also diapers, wipes, pacifiers, toys, some of those new items that, like when you're at the grocery store, just pick up a pack of diapers. It doesn't matter what size, you know, we have donation box out in front. You can just come and throw them in at your convenience, because we want to be able to provide those resources to those young ladies that come in, so we can say, hey, I have girls that come in for a pregnancy test, and they're abortion vulnerable, but it doesn't matter if they are or not. If I know that, because I want, you know they have small children, I'll say, oh, what size is your son Malachi wear? And they're like, oh, size 4 diapers. And then we could provide prenatal vitamins and stuff, but I'll just grab a pack of size 4 diapers and say, here, this will help with your little guy. I know you go through diapers a lot. So that's one area that you could do that. And then also through the DMV, you know, with our license plates, we can sometimes choose specialized plates. If you choose a Choose Life plate, then $50 goes automatically to Wiregrass Hope, but then it also gives you a great opportunity for conversation, because I have one on my car, and you wouldn't believe at the gas station, this guy yesterday said, hey, I like your license plate, you know, tell me about that, you know, so it really is opportunity to just show the world what you stand for.
Yeah, thank you, and let's pray about how we can be involved, and how we can give and sacrifice to encourage life and save lives and prevent stuff from the horrors of what we just saw in that video clip from happening. You know, what's fascinating about God's word is the word for compassion in the Hebrew language is racham. Racham is the same word used for the womb. And that's, God says he's compassionate, he's slow to anger, he's abounding in love. It uses that word racham. And if you change just one vowel, it's rachum, is the womb. And it's so sad to me that we're taking the idea and the image of God's compassion that he has for his people, and we're turning it on its head, and we're making the womb of a mother one of the most dangerous and inhospitable places that a baby could be. In the United States of America, there is a money-making machine. Millions and millions of dollars are being made off of abortions in the United States of America. And I wanted to take about 5 or 10 more minutes, if we could, spare us a little bit more time, and talk about the legalities of abortion in Alabama and in the U.S. You know, Donald Trump was able to appoint a third Supreme Court justice, which seems to be pro-life Supreme Court justice, which is huge, historical, that number one, a president has that many appointees, but that they all be seemingly pro-life. So if something were to come up and maybe go up to the Supreme Court, it may be kicked back to the states in turn, let the states decide what they're to do. But Alabama, you may remember, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, was working on legislation to outlaw abortions in the state of Alabama, or make it very difficult at least. And some of you asked me this question, where is that at? I thought that was illegal in Alabama, as did I. I thought Alabama outlawed abortions. And I remember posting on Facebook, proud to be an Alabamian today. But it's not outlawed in Alabama. And I was actually kind of angered by that. And I thought, man, why Why did I think it was? And there's actually three, maybe four abortion clinics in Alabama that are still operating today. So I was kind of misled on that, but could you kind of fill us in on where is that at in the legislation?
Yeah, so Alabama, it is legal to have an abortion up to 21 weeks. And one good thing about Alabama, I will say, is that we do have a few laws that are, so this is what it is currently. You have to have a 48-hour waiting period, so you have to have two visits in order to get an abortion. So you come to one visit, you do ultrasound counseling, and they do have mandated material they have to give the mother, but then they have to come back 2 days later to actually have the procedure. Not all states are like that. Florida is one that you just go the same day and you can get an abortion. But thankfully, you know, we do have a pro-life and believing legislation here in Alabama, so they wanted to pass what they call the heartbeat law, saying that if your baby had a heartbeat, that you cannot have an abortion, which would be tremendous because most people don't even know they're pregnant until they're 4 or 5 weeks pregnant, and you can really hear the heartbeat by 6 weeks. So that would really limit the capacity. So it went through our legislation, it went to our governor, and she signed it. Yay. So that was awesome. We're like, yay! Mm-hmm. But as soon as that happened, Planned Parenthood, with the support of the OBGYN in Huntsville, who's one of the biggest abortion clinics in our state, has filed a lawsuit against that. So now it is a standstill. So that law was signed, but it's not effective at this point because they're pending that lawsuit that they're working on, because it is, like he said, a money-making thing. They charge, we have a client that is, she's the one with the 10-week thing. She made an appointment with an abortion clinic, and then she missed her appointment, and then they said they're going to charge her $40 more for her next appointment. So I was like, good, keep charging them. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're like, then they'll, like, it starts adding up, and that discourages them. Mm-hmm. So it is all about the money. Every little bit, it's just about the money, and that's the evilness. You know, they like to say it's for women's rights, or, you know, these horrible situations that sometimes these ladies, you know, maybe get into. But really, it is about the money.
But Rebecca, it seems so strange that the very same doctors that are delivering babies, bringing them into the world, are the ones that are also doing abortions.
Yeah, we've, I think the media and Planned Parenthood has done a good job into fooling the American public into thinking that abortions are a medical procedure.
Yeah.
They, by definition, are not a medical procedure, because in order for something to be a medical procedure, someone has to be made well. A life has to be attempted to be saved. And by definition, in abortion, a life has to be ended. It is not a medical procedure. It's anything but. It's a murder procedure. But we've done a good job at whitewashing that.
It's execution.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
And the numbers for the United States, just so you guys know, is 58 million abortions have been performed since 1973. And we have 1.2 million abortions each year in the United States, and that works out to be about 3,000 deaths a day. So 3,000 abortions a day, and that's, you know, when I went to talk to his students, I had a picture of 9/11, maybe it was right after 9/11 I had gone, and I said, hey guys, you know, we were so upset about 9/11, and looking through my Facebook scroll, but I kept seeing that number pop up, you know, like for the 9/11, and then it just hit me, well, that's the number of daily American lives being lost through abortion. And of course, the public doesn't want to see it that way. If we could ever open their eyes, if God could ever open their eyes, I know that they would be appalled to know that.
Yeah. Let's take a few minutes. Any questions or comments for Rebecca, Joanne?
Are there other forms of income for the abortion people other than just through their clients? Is there...
Yeah, so there's federal funding and state funding for most of the abortion clinics are funded by Planned Parenthood, which is a women's health service. So they just have a part of what they do is abortions, which is kind of like the main thing that they focus on. But they
does
do
Medicaid
offer women's
cover
health.
It?
No, Medicaid does not cover abortion.
What about, is it true that they sell the body part?
Yes, that is true. So, you know, we're talking about the images and what a difference that can make and the impact it can make. One thing is the movie sometimes, watching the actual life movie of what goes on. A movie like Saving Private Ryan really showed us about D-Day, right, and made that impact. One of the movies that I could recommend is a movie called Unplanned. And it is actually the true story of a lady named Abby Johnson, who was the director of a Planned Parenthood in Texas.
Oh, wow.
And she got a lot of flack for it, but I tell you, it's eye-opening to what goes on in abortion clinics and the what we're talking about, kind of like the monster of Planned Parenthood and the money behind that and what's fueling that type of business.
It really, I mean, the Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil. That is just so true and it's just so timeless.
Rebecca, I have one more comment. So I'm a professional social worker and I do adoption home studies.
Oh, yeah.
And the very first one I ever did was a young woman who was married at the time, had three children already at home, and then they were divorcing. And so she was overwhelmed with this next pregnancy, but she didn't want to have an abortion. So that was our very first
if we can,
adoption.
That's another way to promote life is through adoption. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, that's one thing that I've really learned, and it's been a struggle for my emotions, how clients sometimes really are stuck on the thought of getting an abortion, and I'm trying to offer them the option of adoption.
Yes.
But sadly, a lot of them have had bad experiences, maybe through foster care, or they're growing up and they don't really understand the concept of adoption today and how it can be. So that's something that we can educate our community and people around you, and through adopting families ourselves, that we can be extension to show and say, hey, this is what we can offer for your child.
Just be careful how you pray, because you may say, I need you to open your home for
yes.
a new addition for your family. But Michael, you've been waiting so patiently, yes. Thank you. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'll be praying for Alabama that they get new judges up in the Capitol that are pro-life, because with this election, Florida now only has one pro-choice judge up in Tallahassee.
Oh, good.
All the rest are pro-life.
Interesting, didn't know that. Any other questions? Yeah, Joy.
I live very close to Alabama, but I'm in Florida. And because my children are not fully immunized,
I can't even say it, yeah.
Vaccinated.
What I had understood was they had passed a law that I could not become a foster parent because of that.
Yeah.
So there's so many other, I don't know if that probably wouldn't apply to adoption, would it?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that I'm not exactly sure on the rules of adoption as far as how to get qualified. My brother has done it, and it sounded like it was a lot, but it's been so worth it. They do, you know, that's what I try to tell the moms. I said, you know, they do background checks, they do financial checks, they do family things, you know, so it is a process, but if God puts that on your heart, I really want to encourage you to consider that, because these little children need a home.
You just dip the bread in the salt.
Oh.
Yeah. Any other questions for Rebecca? Yeah.
Do y'all have a military that if a lady decides, hey, I know you're not open, but I can call and get a call from someone?
She's asking, when you're closed, there's a number, like a hotline kind of thing that they can call?
Yeah, so we don't really have a hotline, but we just have where we can, you know, they can leave a message and then we'll get back to them. Yeah, so unfortunately, we don't. There's a national hotline, but not for us.
Y'all have that on the website?
Yes,
yes. Yeah, good question. Any other questions, guys? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's it really changes them. Once they hear that heartbeat, no matter what they say, you can just see it on their face, you know, in their heart. And, you know, I think that, you know, very few encounters that I've had have been just calloused, cold-hearted person that's just like, I'm getting an abortion. Most of these women are really in desperate situations and really feeling so like this is their only option. And so some of them, I had one girl, she did not want to, her mother and her grandmother were both telling her that she needed to get an abortion. And so sometimes it really is, you know, not just this evil person that's trying to kill her baby. It really is just this situation that she's in, and she's trying to find a way out, and trying to find a way out quick. And that's her feeling, is maybe abortion's that answer.
I think
Is there a certain age that you have to be to volunteer, and how do you start that? Can you just go by any other job open and talk to them?
Yeah, definitely. So we do have like a mentor or volunteer application, and we do ask for the volunteers to be 18 or older as far as mentoring. But like I talked, I think, to Tanya earlier about if you have children that you want to come, you know, you have homeschoolers or something that can come with you, we can work it out where, you know, if they come with you, then they can help in our baby boutique and kind of sort clothes and diapers and stuff like that. And then if you wanted to do the mentoring, and by the way, when we say mentoring with our clients and we're talking about this one-on-one talking to them, we do training for that. You know, we don't just put you in there. So we go through a whole process of training so that way you're equipped to go into those rooms and talk to these young ladies.
Okay, we're going to get you to hold your questions for right now. We're going to see if we can get Rebecca to hang around for a few minutes afterwards. But we're going to make an appeal to you. This is something that DMF seldom ever does. I've been here, I don't know how long I've been here, but I've never seen us pass an offering plate. And that's something we typically don't do. But DMF, the leadership, made a determination when we talked about Rebecca coming about us giving some money to help at Wiregrass Hope. But I feel real strong today that there's somebody out here, or you, some of you guys sitting here, wants to give something for this. I'm not going to say a whole lot.
Oh, this is sweet.
I'm going to pass the plate, and we're going to let this go around. And if you want to write a check, make it out to DMF, and we'll just give Rebecca
and
one.
DMF is already giving.
Right.
Yeah, tell them.
DMF made a decision earlier that we're going to give $500 today. But that's not a whole lot, guys.
She's going to be here for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Most of us have our things in the car. So
okay, but so she's going to be here for a few minutes. So if you don't have anything to go in the offering plate right now, Miss Joanne's going to be here.
Yeah, our hands
are both the Joannes. Get with them and give them a check or cash, and we'll make sure that it gets channeled to the right place. But we're going to pass this around, and Gabe's going to go ahead.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, okay.
You can tell we never do this.
She's everywhere.
Thank you.
You can tell we're not used to passing a basket around. Let's say the blessing over the juice together.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam borei peri hagafen. Amen.
Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who creates the fruit of the vine. And our Messiah said that he is the vine, and we are his branches. If we abide in him, we will bear much fruit. And a fruit is a what? A mitzvah. A mitzvah is a good deed, a righteous act of obedience. And let's say the blessing over the bread together.
Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Amen.
Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who brings forth bread from the earth. And we know Yeshua is the bread of life that was brought forth from the earth. He resurrected. The grave is empty. Amen. So, Rebecca, how much do you appreciate having Rebecca come and take time on her side to do this?
Yeah.
Keep in mind, she has a wedding to go to down in Panama. So she's going to have to skid out of here about 10 minutes. So if you have questions or comments for her, just keep them kind of brief. She needs to get on the road pretty quick here. But thank you so much, Rebecca, for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is recording the audio.
Oh.